Stick you spoke to, the wolf. Her black eyes shifted toward Red again. He favors her. He will never let her go. Not until she grows old in that tank and dies. Centuries from now, possibly. Ethan's gut twisted.
Please don't make us go back,
Rithi whispered, clinging to Milana.
Hush,
Milana warned. Mark studied them.
Look, ladies, you're in a tough spot. You're not only slaves, but stolen slaves.
A warning look at Ethan, who shrugged. He had no regrets.
Yet there are laws about your treatment. It's archaic and nonsensical that anyone can be owned, but if you can prove severe maltreatment, it might allow for you to be purchased by someone else.
Not freed,
Sasa whispered.
Only your new owner could do that,
Mark said sadly.
So buy them and be done with it.
Ariadne crossed her arms. What about you, sweetheart? Flynn purred at the dragon, like the Fey male literally couldn't help himself. Her eyes burned crimson.
I'm beyond your pay grade, lordling.
Try me.
But the dragon turned back to staring at the TV, still paused on the video game. Ethan swallowed and asked her,
It's bad, then, what he does to the mystics?
He tortures them,
Ariadne said flatly, and Rithi whimpered her agreement.
The wolf female is defiant. She did not lie about his punishments. I've sat on his hand for years and witnessed him send her into the darkest corners of hell. He lets the demons and their princes taunt her, terrify her. He thinks he'll break her one day. I'm not so sure.
Ethan's stomach turned. Ariadne went on. She spoke true today about the necromancers, too. Flynn, Mark, and Declan turned toward Ethan, brows high.
You want answers about your dead brother? Then you should find one.
Ethan nodded. The dragon belonged to the House of Flame and Shadow, even if the slave tattoo removed her from its protections. She'd have knowledge of a necromancer's ability. Declan announced,
Well, since we're now harboring stolen slaves, we might as well make you ladies comfortable. Feel free to claim Rune's room, second bedroom at the top of the stairs.
The three sprites zoomed for the staircase, as if they were no more than three excited children. Ethan couldn't help his smile. He'd done some good today, at least, even if it would land him in a heap of trouble. Ariadne slowly got to her feet. They rose with her. Flynn, standing closest, said to the dragon,
You could run, you know. Shift into your other form and take off. We won't tell anyone where you went.
Her red eyes again dimmed to black.
Don't you know what this does?
She lifted her arm to reveal the tattoo there. She laughed bitterly.
I can't shift unless he allows it. And even if I manage it, anywhere I go, anywhere on Midgard, he can track me in that form.
You teleported, Cormac said to Bryce an hour later, as she and Hunt stood beside his cot in the city ship's hospital. The prince was pale, but alive. Every shard of the Gorsian bullet had been removed. Another hour, and he'd be back to normal. Hunt didn't particularly care. They'd only come to Cormac for answers. Hunt was still recovering from the sex that had blasted him apart, mind and body and soul. The sex that Bryce had known would bring him back from the brink, that had made his magic sing, had made their magics merge. He didn't know how to describe it, the feeling of her magic wending through him, like he existed all at once and not at all, like he could craft whatever he wished from thin air and nothing would be denied to him. Did she live with this, day after day, that pure sense of possibility? It had faded since they'd teleported, but he could still feel it there, in his chest, where her handprint had glowed, a slumbering little kernel of creation. How? Bryce asked. She'd had no shame, not even a blush striding in here, the two of them wearing navy blue aquatic body armor they'd taken from the airlock to cover themselves. Rune had looked thoroughly uncomfortable, but Therian had laughed at Hunt's disheveled hair and whatever stupid happiness was on his face, and said, "Good work bringing our boy back, Legs." Bryce had gone right to Cormac and explained what had happened in the most Quinlan-like way Hunt could imagine. Right at the end of banging Hunt's brains out, right when we came together, we wound up in the airlock. Cormac studied her, then Hunt.
Your powers merged, I take it.
Yeah, Bryce said. We both went all glowy. Not in the way that he was glowing during his, she frowned, rage days. She waved a hand. This was like, we glowed with my starlight. Then we teleported. Cormac said. I wonder if you need Athalar's power for teleporting. I can't tell if that's an insult or not, Bryce said. Hunt lifted his brows.
In what way?
If my powers only work if my big, tough male helps me out.
It can't be romantic, Hunt demanded.
Bryce huffed. I'm an independent female.
All right, Hunt said, laughing softly. Let's just say that I'm like some magic token in a video game, and when you use me, you level up.
That is the dorkiest thing you've ever said, Bryce accused, and Hunt sketched a bow.
So Hunt's magic is the key to Bryce's? Rune asked Cormac.
I don't know if it's Hunt specifically, or simply energy, Cormac said. Your power came from the gates. It's something we don't understand. It's playing by unknown rules.
Great, Bryce muttered, sinking into the chair beside Rune's near the window. Black, eternal water spread beyond. Hunt rubbed his jaw, frowning.
The Prince of the Pit told me about this.
Bryce's brow scrunched. Sex teleporting? Hunt snorted.
No. He told me that you and I hadn't explored what our powers could do together.
Rune said. You think this is what he had in mind?
I don't know,
Hunt admitted, marking the gleam of worry on Bryce's face. They still had a lot to talk about.
Is it wise, Therian drawled, to do as he says?
I think we should wait to see if our theory is correct, Bryce said. See if it really was our powers merging. She asked Hunt, how do you feel?
Fine, he said. I think I kept a kernel of your power in me for a while, but it's gone quiet.
She smiled slightly. We definitely need to do more research.
You just want to bang Athalar again, Therian countered.
Bryce inclined her head. I thought that was a given. Hunt stalked toward her, fully intending to drag her to some quiet room to test out the theory. But the door to the room slid open, and Commander Sendez appeared. Her face was grim. Hunt braced himself. The Asteri had found them. The Omegas were about to attack. But her gaze fell on Cormac. She said quietly,
the Medwitch told me that in your delirium you were talking about someone named Sophie Renast. That name is known to us here. We've heard of her work for years now. But I thought you should know that we were summoned to rescue an agent from the North Sea weeks ago. It wasn't until we reached her that we realized it was Sophie.
The room went utterly silent. Cormac's swallow was audible as Sendez went on.
We were too late. Sophie had drowned by the time our divers picked her up.
Chapter 47. The morgue was cold and quiet and empty, save for the female corpse lying on the chrome table, covered by a black cloth. Bryce stood by the doorway as Cormac knelt beside the body, preserved by a Medwitch until the ship could hand Sophie over to the Ophian rebels for claiming. The prince was silent. He'd been this way since Sendez had come to his room. And though Bryce's body still buzzed with all that she and Hunt had done, seeing that slender female body on the table, the prince kneeling, head bowed. Her eyes stung. Hunt's fingers found hers and squeezed.
I knew,
Cormac said roughly, his first words in minutes.
I think I always knew. but...
Rune stepped to his cousin's side, put a hand on his shoulder.
I'm sorry.
Cormac leaned his brow against the rim of the examination table. His voice shook.
She was good and brave and kind. I never deserved her, not for one minute.
Bryce's throat ached. She let go of Hunt's hand to approach Cormac, touching his other shoulder. Where would Sophie's soul go? Did it linger near her body until they could give her a proper sailing? If she went to one of the resting places, they'd be dooming her to a terrible fate. But Bryce didn't say any of that. Not as Cormac slid his fingers beneath the black cloth and pulled out a blue-tinged, stiff hand. He clasped it in his own, kissing the dead fingers. His shoulders began to shake as his tears flowed.
We met there in a recon report to command, Cormac said, voice breaking. And I knew it was foolish and reckless, but I had to speak to her after the meeting was over, to learn everything I could about her.
He kissed Sophie's hand again, closing his eyes.
I should have gone back for her that night.
Therian, who'd been poring over the coroner's files on Sophie at the desk by the far wall, said gently,
I'm sorry if I gave you false hope. It kept her alive in my heart a little longer,
Cormac said, swallowing back his tears. He pressed her stiff hand against his brow.
My Sophie.
Rune squeezed his shoulder. Therian asked carefully,
Do you know what this means, Cormac?
He rattled off a series of numbers and letters. Cormac lifted his head.
No.
Therian held up a photo.
They were carved on her upper biceps. The coroner thinks she did it while she drowned, with some sort of pin or knife she might have had hidden on her.
Cormac shot to his feet, and Bryce stepped into Hunt's awaiting arms as the Fey Prince folded back the sheet. Nothing on the right arm he'd held, but the left. The assortment of numbers and letters had been carved roughly an inch below her shoulder, left unhealed, cut deep.
Did she know someone was racing to save her?
Hunt asked. Cormac shook his head.
I have no idea. How did the mayor know to pick her up? She could have signaled them with her light,
Cormac mused.
Or maybe they saw Emile's, like they did with Bryce's. It lit up the whole sea taking down those Omegas. It must have signaled them somehow.
Bryce made a note to ask Commander Sendez. She said to Hunt, Do those numbers and letters mean anything to you?
No.
He stroked his thumb over Bryce's hand, as if reassuring himself that she stood there and wasn't the one on that table. Cormac covered Sophie with the sheet again.
Everything Sophie did, it was for a reason. You remind me of her in some ways.
Rune said, I'll put Declan on the hunt as soon as we're home.
What about the Ophian rebels and Pippa? Bryce asked. And the Hind?
Hunt said,
We're everyone's enemy now.
Cormac nodded.
We can only meet the challenge, but knowing for sure that Sophie is gone. I must redouble my efforts to find Emile.
Pippa seemed to know where he was lying low, Therian said. No idea if that's the safe place that Danica mentioned, though.
Cormac's eyes flashed. I'm not letting him fall into your queen's hands, or Ophian's control.
You ready to be a single dad? Bryce drawled. You're just going to take the kid in and what? Bring him to a Valen? That'll be a really great place for him. Cormac stiffened.
I hadn't planned that far. Are you suggesting I leave that child alone in the world?
Bryce shrugged, studying her nails, felt Hunt looking at her closely.
So, do we warn our families? Gods, if the Hind had already headed to her mom's house.
The Hind won't go after them,
Cormac consoled her, then amended.
Not yet. She'll want you in her clutches first, so she can breathe in your suffering while you know she's hunting them down.
So we go home and pretend nothing happened? Rune asked. What's to stop the Hind from arresting us when we get back?
Do you think we could get away with convincing the Asteri that we were at the rebel base to stop Pippa and Ophian? Bryce asked.
Hunt shrugged.
I blasted the shit out of that base, so the evidence is in our favor, especially if Pippa is now hunting us.
The Hind won't buy that, Cormac challenged. But Bryce said, smiling faintly, Master of spinning bullshit, remember?
He didn't smile back, just looked at Sophie, dead and gone before him. So Bryce touched the prince's hand.
We'll make them all pay.
The star on her chest glowed in promise. The depth charger glided between the darkest canyons of the sea floor. In the glass-domed command center, Therian hung back by the arching doorway into the bustling hall beyond and marveled at the array of tech and magic, the uniformed mayor operating all of it. Sendez lingered at his side, approval on her face as she monitored the team keeping the ship operational.
How long have you guys had these ships? Therian asked,
his first words in the minutes since Sendez had invited him down here, where only high-ranking mayor officials were allowed. He supposed that being the River Queen's captain of intelligence granted him access, but he'd had no idea any of this existed. His title was a joke.
Around 2 decades, Sendez said, straightening the lapel of her uniform. They took twice that to conceptualize and build, though.
They must have cost a fortune.
The ocean deeps are full of priceless resources. Our queen exploited them cleverly to fund this project.
Why?
She faced him fully. She had a wonderfully curvy body, he'd noticed, with the sort of ass he'd like to sink his teeth into. But the River Queen's cold face rippled through his mind, and Therian turned to the windows behind the commander. Beyond the wall of glass, a bioluminescent cloud, some sort of jellyfish, bobbed by, suitably unsexy. Sendez asked,
Why does your queen involve herself with the rebels?
She's not involving herself with them. I think she merely wants something that they want. Or used to want, if Pippa was to be believed.
Though after they'd blown the suit to pieces, maybe Ophion would be back on the hunt for the kid. I don't think her motivations for wanting it are necessarily to help people, though.
He winced as he said it. Too bold, too reckless. Sendez huffed a laugh. Your opinion is safe here, don't worry. The Ocean Queen is aware that her sister in the Blue River is moody.
Therian blew out a breath.
Yeah.
He took in the control room again.
So all this, the ships, the rescuing of rebels, is it because the Ocean Queen wants to overthrow the Asteri?
I'm not close enough to her to know whether that's her true motive, but these ships have indeed aided the rebels, so I'd say yes.
And she intends to make herself ruler?
Therian asked carefully. Sendez blinked.
Why would she ever do that?
Why not? That's what the River Queen would do.
Sendez stilled, completely earnest as she said,
The Ocean Queen would not set herself up as a replacement for the Asteri. She remembers a time before the Asteri, when leaders were fairly elected. That is what she wishes to achieve once more.
The dark ocean passed beyond the glass. Therian couldn't suppress his bitter laugh.
And you believe her?
Sendez gave him a pitying look.
I'm sorry that the River Queen has abused your trust so much that you don't.
I'm sorry that you're naive enough to believe everything your queen says,
he countered. Sendez gave him that pitying look again, and Therian tensed. He changed the subject, though.
What are the odds that either you guys or Cormac will release Sophie's body to me?
Her brows lifted.
Why do you want it?
My queen wants it. I don't get to ask questions.
Sendez frowned.
What use could she have with a Thunderbird's corpse?
He doubted Cormac would appreciate Sophie being referred to as a corpse, but he said,
Again, no idea.
Sendez fell silent.
Does your queen have any necromancers in her employ?
Therian started.
What? No.
The only one he knew was hundreds of miles away, and she sure as shit wasn't going to help out the River Queen.
Why?
It's the only reason I can think of to go to such lengths to retrieve a Thunderbird's body, to reanimate it.
Cold horror sluiced through him. A weapon without a conscience or soul,
Sendez nodded gravely. But what does she need it for?
He opened his mouth, but shut it. Speculating on his queen's motives in front of a stranger, even a friendly one, would be foolish, so he shrugged. Guess we'll find out. Sendez saw right through him, though.
We have no claim on the body, but Prince Cormac, as her lover and a member of Ophion, does. You'll have to take it up with him.
Therian knew precisely how that would end, with a giant burning no. So short of becoming a body snatcher, not high on his list of life goals, he wasn't delivering the goods. Time to begin the spin cycle, Therian murmured, more to himself than to Sendez. He'd have to either lie about ever finding Sophie's body, or lie about why he couldn't steal it. Fuck.
You could be more, you know, Sendez said, seeming to read the dread on his face. At a place like this. We don't need to lie and scheme here.
I'm content where I am, Therian said quickly. His queen would never let him leave anyway. But Sendez inclined her head knowingly, sadly.
You ever need anything, Captain Kettos? We're here for you.
The kindness stunned him enough that he had no reply.
Sendez was called over by one of the deck officers, and Therian observed the mayor at the controls. Serious, but smiling. No tension, no walking on eggshells. He glanced at the clock. He should go back to the sleeping quarters Sendez had arranged for them, check in with the others. Yet once he did, he'd sleep. And when he woke, he'd return to Lunathian, to the Blue Court. It was getting harder to ignore the part of him that didn't want to go home at all.
Rune slept miles beneath the surface, a fitful sort of slumber from which he rose frequently, to assure his companions were all piled into the small room with him on the cots and bunk beds. Cormac had opted to remain in the morgue with Sophie, wanting to mourn in private, to say all the prayers to Cathona and Luna that his lover was owed.
Therian dozed on the bottom bunk across from Rune's, sprawled across the top of the sheets. He'd wandered off after dinner to explore the ship, and returned hours later, quiet. He hadn't said anything about what he'd seen other than, it's mare only. So Rune had sat with the lovebirds, Bryce nestled between Hunt's legs as they ate dinner on the floor of the room, the sea drifting by their window. They'd reach the mouth of the Istros at dawn, and Therian's people would be waiting there to transport them upriver to Lunathian. What would happen then? Rune could only pray it'd work out in their favor, that Bryce could play their cards well enough to avoid their doom.
Night?
Day's voice floated into his mind, faint and worried. He let his mind relax, let himself find that bridge, the two couches. She already sat on hers, burning away.
Hey.
Are you all right?
Worried about me, huh?
She didn't laugh.
I heard about an attack on the rebel base on Idra, that people were killed, and the shipment of ammo and the suit destroyed. I thought you might have been among the ones lost.
He surveyed her.
Where are you now?
She asked. He let her change the subject. Somewhere safe. He couldn't say more. I watched Pippa Spetsos and the Ophian rebels kill innocent Vaynir in cold blood today. You want to tell me what the fuck that's about?
She stiffened.
Why did she kill them?
Does it matter? She considered.
No, not if the victims were innocent. Pippa did it herself?
A group of soldiers under her command did. Her flame guttered to hottest blue.
She's a fanatic, dedicated to the rebel cause, yes, but to her own cause most of all.
She was a friend of Agent Cyprus, apparently.
She was no friend to Sophie, or anyone.
Her voice had gone cold, like she was angry enough that she forgot to use Sophie's code name. Sophie's dead, by the way. Day started.
You're sure of this?
Yes, she drowned.
She...
Day's legs curled beneath her.
She was a brave agent. Far better and braver than Ophion deserved.
Genuine sorrow laced Day's words.
You liked her.
She went into the Kavala death camp to save her brother.
Did everything the Ophion commanders asked her, just so she could get scraps of information about him. If Pippa serves only herself, then Sophie was her opposite. All the work she did was for others. But yes, I did like her. I admired her courage, her loyalty. She was a kindred spirit in many ways.
Rune slumped against the back of his couch. So what? You hate Pippa and Ophion too? If everyone hates her and the group, why the fuck do you bother working with them?
Do you see anyone else leading the cause? Has anyone else stepped up to the line?
No, no one else would dare.
Day said, they're the only ones in recent memory to have ever mustered such a force. Only Shahar and General Hunt Athalar ever did anything close, and they were decimated in one battle.
And Athalar had suffered for centuries afterward.
Day went on, to be free of the Asteri. There are things that we all must do that will leave a mark on our souls. It's the cost, so that our children and their children won't ever need to pay it, so they'll know a world of freedom and plenty.
The words of a dreamer, a glimpse beneath that hard-ass facade. So Rune said, the first time he'd said it aloud, I'm not going to have children.
Why?
I can't.
She angled her head.
You're infertile?
He shrugged.
Maybe. I don't know. The Oracle told me when I was a kid that I was to be the last of my bloodline. So either I die before I can sire a child, or I'm shooting blanks.
Does it bother you?
I'd prefer not to be dead before my time, so if her words just mean that I'm not going to be a father, I don't know. It doesn't change a lick of who I am, but I still try not to think about it. No one in my life knows either, and considering the father I have, maybe it's good that I won't be one. I wouldn't know the first thing about how to be a decent dad.
That doesn't seem true.
He snorted. Well, anyway, that was my stupid way of saying that while I might not be having kids, I get what you're saying. I have people in my life who will, and for their kids, their families, I'll do whatever I have to.
But she was having none of his deflecting.
You are kind and caring, and seem to love those around you. I can't think of anything else needed to be a father.
How about growing the hell up and not partying so much? She laughed.
All right, maybe that.
He smiled slightly. Faint, distant stars glowed in the darkness around them. She said,
You seem... unsettled.
I saw a bunch of fucked up shit today. I was having a hard time sleeping before you knocked.
Knocked?
Whatever you want to call it. Summoned me.
Shall I tell you a story to help you sleep?
Her voice was wry.
Yeah,
he'd call her bluff. But she only said,
All right.
He blinked.
Really?
Why not?
She motioned for him to lie down, so Rune did. Closing his eyes. Then, to his shock, she came and sat beside him, brushed a burning hand through his hair, warm and gentle, tentative. She began,
Once upon a time, before Luna hunted the heavens and Solas warmed Kathona's body, before Ogenis blanketed Midgard with water and Urd twined our fates together, there lived a young witch in a cottage deep in the woods. She was beautiful and kind and beloved by her mother. Her mother had done her best to raise her, with her only companions being the denizens of the forest itself, birds and beasts and the babbling brooks.
Her voice, lovely and fair and steady, flowed through him like music. Her hand brushed through his hair again, and he reined in his purr.
She grew older, strong and proud,
but a wandering prince passed by her clearing one day when her mother was gone, beheld her beauty, and wanted her desperately to be his bride.
I thought this was supposed to be a comforting story, Rune muttered.
She laughed softly, tugging on a strand of his hair. Listen.
Rune figured to hell with it and shifted, laying his head on her lap. The fire did not burn him, and the thigh beneath was firm with muscle, yet supple.
And that scent. Day went on. She had no interest in princes, or in ruling a kingdom, or in any of the jewels he offered. What she wanted was a true heart to love her, to run wild with her through the forest. But the prince would not be denied. He chased her through the wood, his hounds following.
Rune's body relaxed, limb by limb. He breathed in her scent, her voice, her warmth.
As she ran, she pleaded with the forest she loved so dearly to help her. So it did. First, it transformed her into a deer, so she might be as swift as the wind. But his hounds outraced her, closing in swiftly. Then the forest turned her into a fish, and she fled down one of the mountain streams. But he built a weir at its base to trap her. So she became a bird, a hawk, and soared for the skies. But the prince was a skilled archer, and he fired one of his iron-tipped arrows.
Rune drifted, quiet and calm. When was the last time anyone had told him a story to lull him to sleep?
It struck her breast, and where her blood fell, olive trees sprouted. As her body hit the earth, the forest transformed her one last time.
Rune woke, still on the mind bridge. Day lay on the couch across from him, asleep as well, her body still veiled with flame. He stood, crossing the distance to her. A princess of fire, sleeping, waiting for a knight to awaken her. He knew that story. It tugged at the back of his mind. A sleeping warrior princess surrounded by a ring of fire, damned to lie there until a warrior brave enough to face the flames could cross them. Day turned over, and through the flame, he glimpsed a hint of long hair draped over the arm of the couch. He backed away a step, but somehow she heard, and shot upright. Flame erupted around her as Rune retreated to his own couch.
What were you doing?
Rune shook his head. I wanted to know how the story ended. I fell asleep as the witch was pierced with an arrow. Day jumped up from her couch, walking around it, putting it between them, like he'd crossed some major line. But she said,
The forest turned the witch into a monster before she hit the earth, a beast of claws and fangs and bloodlust. She ripped the prince and hounds who pursued her into shreds.
And that's it? Rune demanded.
That's it,
Day said, and walked into the darkness, leaving only embers drifting behind. Part 3. The Pit. Chapter 48. Rune paced in front of Bryce's TV, his phone at his ear. The tattoos on his forearms shifted as he clenched the phone tight, but his voice was calm, heavy, as he said, All right, thanks for looking, Deck. Bryce watched Rune's face as her brother hung up and knew exactly what he was going to say.
No luck?
Rune slumped back against her couch cushions.
No.
What we saw on Sophie's arm doesn't come up anywhere. Bryce nestled into Hunt on the other end of the couch, while the angel talked to Isaiah on the phone. Upon arriving back in Lunathian, courtesy of a few Blue Court wave skimmers, Therian had gone beneath to see his queen. It was unlikely that the River Queen would know what the numbers and letters carved onto Sophie's biceps meant, but it was worth a shot. Cormac had found 30 messages from his father waiting for him, asking after his whereabouts, so he'd gone off to the Autumn King's villa to convince the male, and therefore his father, that he'd been accompanying Bryce to Nidaros. Bryce supposed she should clue her parents in about the official cover story, but she couldn't quite bring herself to do it. She needed to settle, calm her racing mind a bit first.
Frankly, it was a miracle that the Hind and her Dreadwolves hadn't been waiting at the apartment, that the news wasn't broadcasting all of their faces with a Rebel Traitors banner slapped beneath it. But a skim of the news while Rune had talked to Deck showed nothing. So she'd spent the last few minutes trying hard to teleport from the couch to the kitchen. Nothing. How had she done it during sex? She wasn't due for her lesson with Rune and Cormac until tomorrow, but she wanted to show up with some idea. Bryce concentrated on the kitchen stools. I am here. I want to go there. Her magic didn't so much as budge. 2 points in space. I'm folding a piece of paper, joining them. My power is the pencil that punctures through the paper, linking them. Hunt said,
Yeah, Ember grilled me, but we're good. We had a nice time.
He winked at Bryce, even though the casual gesture didn't quite light his eyes.
All right, I'll see you at the meeting later.
Hunt hung up the phone and sighed.
Unless they've got a dagger digging into his back, it seems like Isaiah has no clue about what went down at Edra, or that the Hind saw any of us.
What game is she playing?
Rune said, toying with his lip ring. You really think Isaiah wasn't playing it cool to lure you to the Comitium later?
If they wanted to arrest us, they'd have been waiting for us, Hunt said. The Hind is keeping this to herself.
But why? Bryce asked, frowning deeply. To mess with our minds?
Honestly, Hunt said, that's a distinct possibility. But if you ask me, I think she knows we're up to something. I think she wants to see what we do next.
Bryce considered. We've been so focused on Emile and Ophion and the demons that we've forgotten one key thing. Sophie died knowing vital intel. The Hind knew that, was afraid enough of it that she killed her to make sure the intel died with Sophie. And if it didn't take much for Therion to piece together that Sophie and Danica knew each other and come to us, I bet the Hind has figured that out too. She has hackers who could have found the same emails between them. Hunt's wing brushed her shoulder, curving around her.
But how does it even tie to Danica? Sophie didn't get the intel until 2 years after Danica died.
No idea, Bryce said, leaning her head against Hunt's shoulder, a casual, steadying sort of intimacy. The sex on the ship had been life-altering, soul-altering, just altering. She couldn't wait to have him again. But she cleared the thought from her head as Rune asked, Any chance this somehow ties into Danica researching that Fendir lineage? Her brother rubbed his temples. Though I don't see how anything about that would be war-changing intel worth killing to hide.
Me neither, Bryce said, sighing.
She'd slept last night curled beside Hunt in their bunk, limbs and wings and breath mingling, but she was still exhausted. From the shadows under Hunt's eyes, she knew the same weariness weighed on him. A knock sounded on her door, and Rune rose to get it. Hunt's hand tangled in her hair, and he tugged on the strands, getting Bryce to look up at him. He kissed her nose, her chin, her mouth.
I might be tired, he said, as if he'd sensed her thoughts. But I'm ready for round two when you are.
Her blood heated.
Good,
she murmured back. I'd hate for you to be unable to keep up in your old age. They were interrupted by Rune standing over them.
Sorry to break up the love fest, but the hellhounds outside.
Paxian gave them no time to prepare as he burst in after Rune, black wings splaying slightly.
How the fuck did you call that ship?
What are you doing here?
Hunt asked quietly. Paxian blinked.
Making sure you're all still in one piece.
Why?
Rune asked.
Because I want in.
Paxian helped himself to a stool at the counter. Bryce coughed, but said innocently, On what? The hellhound threw her a dry look.
On whatever it was that had you all going to meet with Ophion, then blasting their shit to hell.
Bryce said smoothly, We thought to cut off Ophion before they could ruin Valbara's peace. Baxian snorted.
Yeah, sure, without backup, without alerting anyone.
There are rebel sympathizers in the 33rd, Hunt said firmly. We couldn't risk tipping them off.
I know, Baxian replied with equal cool. I'm one of them.
Bryce stared at the shifter and said as calmly as she could, You realize we could go right to Celestina with this? You'd be crucified before nightfall.
I want you to tell me what's going on, Baxian countered.
I already told you, and you just royally fucked yourself over, Bryce said.
If they start asking questions about how you know I'm a sympathizer, you think anyone's going to buy your bullshit about going there to save Valbara from the big bad human rebels, especially when you lied to Celestina about going to your parents' house?
Baxian laughed. Hunt had gone so still that Bryce knew he was a breath away from killing the male, even though no lightning zapped around him.
The Asteri will let the Hind start on you right away, and we'll see how long those lies hold up under her ministrations.
Why isn't the Hind here yet? Bryce asked. She'd confirmed nothing.
Not her style, Baxian said. She wants to give you enough rope to hang yourself.
And Idra wasn't enough, Rune blurted.
Bryce glared at him. Her brother ignored it, his lethal attention on Baxian.
If I were to guess, I'd say that she thinks you'll lead her toward whatever it is she wants.
Rune growled. What do you want?
Baxian leaned back against the counter.
I told you. I want in.
No, Hunt said.
Did I not warn your asses yesterday? Baxian said. Did I not back you up when Sabine came raging in here? Have I said anything to anyone about it since then?
The Hind plays games that span years, Hunt countered with soft menace. Who knows what you're planning with her? But we're not rebels anyway, so there's nothing for you to join.
Baxian laughed, without joy, without any sort of amusement, and hopped off the stool, aimed right for the front door.
When you fools want actual answers, come find me.
The door slammed behind him. In the silence that fell in his wake, Bryce closed her eyes.
So we play casual, Rune said. Figure out how to outsmart the Hind.
Hunt grunted, not sounding convinced. That made two of them. A buzz sounded, and Bryce opened her eyes to see Rune scanning his phone.
Flynn needs me back at the house. Call me if you hear anything.
Be careful,
Hunt warned him. But her brother just patted the hilt of the star sword before striding out, as if the blade would do anything against the Hind. Alone in their apartment, truly alone at last, Bryce waggled her brows at Hunt.
Want to take our minds off everything with a little tumble in the sheets?
Hunt chuckled, leaning to brush a kiss on her mouth. He paused millimeters from her lips, close enough that she could feel his smile as he said,
How about you tell me what the fuck you know about Emil?
Bryce pulled back.
Nothing.
His eyes blazed.
Oh, Spetsos practically blabbed it, didn't she? With her talk about snakes.
Lightning shimmered along his wings.
Are you fucking insane? Sending that kid to the Viper Queen.
Chapter 49.
How'd it go?
Rune stood before Flynn and Deck, his friends sitting on the sectional with two innocent smiles. Ethan sat on Deck's other side, and his wary face tipped Rune off.
I'm wondering if I should ask you three the same thing, Rune said, arching a brow.
Well, you're alive and not captured, Deck said,
tucking his hands behind his head and leaning back against the couch.
I'm assuming it went well.
Let's leave it at that, Rune said.
He'd fill them in later, when he was a little less exhausted and a little less worried about those innocent expressions.
Good, great, fantastic, Flynn said, leaping to his feet.
So, you know how you're always saying that it's pretty sexist that we don't have any female roommates?
I've never said that.
Flynn gestured to the foyer behind him.
Well, here you go.
Rune blinked as three fire sprites zoomed in, landing on Flynn's broad shoulders. A full-bodied one cuddled up against his neck, smiling.
"Meet the triplets," Flynn said. "Rithi, Sasa, and Milana."
The taller of the slender ones, Sasa, batted her eyelashes at Rune.
"Prince."
"Our insurance rates will go sky high," Rune said to Declan, appealing to the slightly less insane of his roommates.
"When the fuck did you become a grown-up?" Flynn barked.
Ethan jerked his chin toward the doorway again.
"Wait to have your meltdown until after you meet the fourth new roommate."
A short, curvy female walked in, her wavy black hair nearly down to her waist. Most of her tan skin was hidden by the plaid blanket wrapped around her naked body. But her eyes, burning soulless, they were blood red, glowing like embers.
"Ariadne, meet Rune," Flynn crooned. "Rune, meet Ariadne."
She held Rune's stare, and he stilled as he caught a glimmer of something molten course beneath the skin of her forearm, making her flesh look like scales. Rune whirled on Deck and Flynn.
"I was gone for a day, sunrise to sunrise, and I come back to a dragon? Where did she come from?"
Deck and Flynn, the three sprites with them, pointed to Ethan. The wolf winced. Rune glanced back at the dragon, at the hand clutching the blanket around her, the slight hint of the brand on her wrist. He studied the sprites.
"Please tell me they're at least here legally," Rune said quietly.
"Nope," Flynn said cheerfully. Hunt had two options, start shouting or start laughing. He hadn't decided which one he wanted to do as they walked down a narrow hallway of the most lethal warehouse in the meat market, aiming for the door at the far end. The blank-faced fey guards at the door didn't so much as blink. If they knew who Bryce was to them, they gave no sign.
"How'd you figure it out?"
Bryce's brows bunched. She hadn't denied it on the flight over here, that she'd somehow gotten a meal to the Viper Queen, and Hunt had been too fucking pissed to ask any questions. So fucking pissed that it had driven away any lingering lust from last night. Hunt said under his breath,
"I told you, you're not as slick as you think. The way you got so tense with Pippa talking about snakes was a dead giveaway."
He shook his head.
"It wasn't Pippa killing those people to track Emile, was it?"
Bryce winced.
"No. It was the Viper Queen's henchman. Well, henchwoman. She sent one of her human lackeys, some merc, to hunt him down. Hence the female human scent."
"And you were fine with this? Not simply killing those people, but framing Pippa?"
Granted, Pippa was awful, but... Something crumpled in his chest. Was this any different from his time with Shahar? Falling for a beautiful, powerful female, only to have her hide her innermost thoughts?
"No,"
Bryce said, paling. She halted 10 feet from the guards, touched Hunt's arm.
"I wasn't fine with that part at all."
Her throat bobbed.
"I told her to find him by any means necessary. I didn't realize it'd entail that."
"That was a stupid fucking thing to do,"
Hunt snarled, and immediately hated himself for the bruised look that came into her eyes. But he continued toward the door, pulling out of her grip. The guards wordlessly let them enter the lushly appointed apartment, definitely a far cry from her ramshackle office levels below. A foyer of carved wood flowed ahead, the crimson rug leading toward a large sitting room with a massive floor-to-ceiling interior window, overlooking the Viper Queen's notorious fighting pit. Bryce murmured coldly as they aimed for the sitting room.
"I'm not letting this poor kid fall into anyone's hands, even Cormac's."
"So that night we came here with Juniper and Fury, was Emile here already?"
"The Viper Queen was supposed to have apprehended him by that point. But then Therian told us about the dead Selkie, and it was clear she hadn't yet found him. So I came here to see what the hell had happened, and to inform her that leaving a trail of bodies, that was not what I had intended. When I walked past the guards after we separated to search,
I might have muttered a few questions for them to convey to their queen. And they might have had one of their undercover guards come up to me at the butcher, where I bought the meat for Syrinx, and tell me that the kid was still at large, and they'd last seen him near the Black Dock, which made me doubt everything I'd assumed about him coming here. And I knew that I needed to go to the bone quarter to make sure he wasn't there, while the Viper Queen kept searching. But apparently, either she or her henchwoman ignored my demand to stop the killing and added a few more to the list before they grabbed Emil.
So, coming here that night was a big waste of time.
She shook her head. No. I also needed everyone to think I was looking for Emil and that we'd cleared this space. So if the Viper Queen did manage to get him, no one would come here again. And I needed you and Fury with me so that the Viper Queen would remember who would come fuck her up if she hurt the kid in the process. The Queen now stood before them, a slim female in a neon green silk jumpsuit beside a large plush couch. Her glossy black bob reflected the golden flames from the fireplace to her right. And seated on the couch before her, small and thin and wide-eyed, was a boy.
Come to collect your package, or make more threats about Athalar cooking me alive,
the Viper Queen asked, puffing on a cigarette between her purple-painted lips. Nice sneakers, was all Bryce said, gesturing to the snake shifter's white and gold high tops. But Bryce offered Emil a gentle smile.
Hey, Emil, I'm Bryce.
The boy said nothing. Rather, he looked up at the Viper Queen, who drawled,
Red's the one who got you here. Ignore the angel. He's all bark, no bite.
Oh, he likes to bite, Bryce murmured, but Hunt was in no mood to laugh or even smile. He said to the Viper Queen, power sparking in his veins,
Don't think for one moment that I'll ever forget how you screwed me over that night with Micah. Vic's suffering and Justinian's death are on you.
The Queen had the audacity to look down at herself, as if searching for her guilt. But before Hunt could contemplate roasting her, Emil squeaked,
Hi.
He was just a kid, alone and afraid. The thought doused any lightning in Hunt's veins. Bryce nodded at the Viper Queen.
I'd like a moment with Emil, please.
It was a command, from a princess to another ruler. The Viper Queen's slitted pupils widened. With amusement or predatory intent, Hunt didn't know. But she said,
Emil, holler if you need anything.
She sauntered down an ornate wood-paneled hallway and vanished through a door. Bryce plopped onto the couch beside Emil and said, So what's up? The boy and Hunt blinked at her. Emil said quietly,
My sister's dead, isn't she?
Bryce's face softened, and Hunt said,
Yeah, she is. We're so sorry.
Emil gazed at his pale, bony hands.
The Vipe said you were looking, but I knew.
Hunt scanned the boy for any hint of that Thunderbird gift, any hint of a magic able to harvest and transform power to his will. Bryce put a hand on Emil's shoulder.
Your sister was a badass, a brave, brilliant badass.
Emil offered a wobbly smile. Gods, the boy was scrawny, way too thin for his lanky frame. If this was how thin he remained after a few weeks outside the death camp's barbed wire fences, this boy had seen and endured things that no child, no person should face. Shame flooded Hunt, and he sat down beside Bryce. No wonder she'd worked alone to arrange this. None of the rest of them had really stopped to think about the kid himself, just his power, and what it might mean if the wrong person got hold of it. Hunt tried to catch her eye, to show her that he understood, and he didn't hold any of this against her, but she kept her focus on the boy. Bryce said quietly,
I lost a sister too, 2 years ago.
It was hard, and you never stopped feeling the loss, but
you learned to live with it.
I'm not going to tell you time heals all wounds, because for some people, it doesn't. Hunt's heart strained at the pain in her voice, even now. But I get it, what you're feeling. Emil said nothing. Hunt suppressed the urge to gather both of them in his arms and hug them tightly. And look, Bryce went on, no matter what the Viper Queen says to you, don't take her threats too seriously. She's a psycho, but she's not a kid killer.
Real reassuring,
Hunt muttered. Bryce scowled at him. It's true. But Hunt knew why the Viper Queen wouldn't have harmed the kid. He turned to the fighting pit beyond the window. It was dim and quiet now, too early in the day for the fights that drew hundreds and made millions for the snake shifter. Alarm flared. Hunt blurted, "You didn't sign any contracts with her, right?"
"Why would she want me to sign anything?"
Emil said, towing the carpet. Hunt said quietly,
"Thunderbirds are insanely rare. A lot of people would want that power."
He extended a hand toward Emil, and lightning wreathed his fingers, wending between them.
"I'm not a Thunderbird," Hunt said, "but I've got a similar gift. Made me, valuable."
He tapped the branded out slave's mark on his wrist.
"Not in any way that counts, deep down. But it made certain people willing to do a lot of bad things to attain me."
The Viper Queen would kill, had killed, to own that power. Emil's eyes widened at the lightning, like he was seeing Hunt for the first time.
"Sophie said something like that about her power once, that it didn't change who she was inside."
Hunt melted a bit at the trust in the kid's face.
"It didn't. And your power doesn't either."
Emil glanced between them, then down the hall.
"What power?"
Hunt slowly, slowly turned to Bryce. Her face revealed nothing.
"Your Thunderbird power? The power that downed those Omega boats?"
The kid's face shuddered.
"That was Sophie."
Bryce lifted her chin in challenge. "Emil doesn't have any powers, Hunt." Hunt looked like she'd dumped a bucket of ice water on him.
"What do you mean?"
he asked, voice low. He didn't wait for her to reply before he pushed.
"How do you know, Bryce?"
"I didn't know for sure," Bryce said. The small, scared boy now cringed away from the angel. She continued, "But I figured it was a good possibility. The only thing Vanir care about is power. The only way to get them to care about a human boy was to spin a story about him having powers like Sophie's. The only way to make sure he got to safety was to craft a lie about him being valuable." "I had a feeling Sophie knew that all too well," she added with a soft smile to the boy. "Emil is valuable. To Sophie, to his family, as all loved ones are." Hunt blinked again. Anger and fear warred in his eyes. He whispered,
"Does the Viper Queen know this?"
Bryce didn't hide her disdain. She never asked. Bryce had been sure to word the bargain between them very carefully, so Emil could walk out of here whenever he wished. Hunt's lightning writhed across his brow.
"Any protection she's offering this kid will vanish the moment she knows."
His gaze shifted to Emil, who watched the lightning not in fear, but with sorrow. The lightning immediately vanished. Hunt rubbed his face, then said to Bryce,
"You did all of this on a guess?"
"Sophie was part human, like me."
Cormac himself had said they were alike, she explained as gently as she could.
"You've never spent a moment of your life as a human, Hunt. You always had a value to Vanir. You just said so yourself."
His wings rustled.
"And what was the Vipe's asking price?"
"She'd retrieve Emil, hold him here in comfort and safety, until I came to pick him up. And in return, I'd owe her a favor."
"That was reckless," he said through his teeth.
"It's not like I have piles of gold lying around."
This wasn't the time or place for this fight.
"You can have your alpha hole fit later," she seethed.
"Fine,"
Hunt shot back. He leaned forward to address the boy, that thunderous expression easing.
Sorry, Emil. I'm glad you're safe, however insanely Bryce acted to make that happen. You game to answer a few questions?
Emil nodded shallowly. Bryce braced herself. Hunt gave Bryce another dirty look before he said,
How did you keep the Viper Queen from knowing you don't have any power?
Emil shrugged. When she talked about fights and stuff, I didn't answer. I think she thought I was scared.
Good call, Bryce said, but Hunt cut in. Were you originally heading to this city to find some sort of meeting place that you and your sister had agreed on beforehand?
Emil nodded again. We were supposed to meet here, actually.
Hunt murmured, A place where the weary souls find relief.
Bryce explained, The meat market is drug central. I figured if Danica had suggested it as a hiding spot, then she might have thought the Viper Queen would be amenable to helping them out. Turns out Danica was right. Emil added,
The Vipe's agent picked me up before I could make it to the city proper. She said it wasn't safe anywhere but with them.
It wasn't, Bryce said, smiling gently. But now you're safe with us.
Well, at least they could agree on that. Hunt asked, Did your sister ever mention anything secret about the Asteri? Anything super valuable to the rebels?
Emil considered, brow scrunching.
No.
Bryce blew out a heavy breath. It had been a long shot anyway. Emil wrung his fingers.
But I do recognize that name. Danica. She was the wolf, right?
Bryce went still. You knew Danica?
Emil shook his head.
No, but Sophie told me about her the night we separated. The blonde wolf who died a couple years ago, with the purple and pink streaks in her hair.
Chapter 50 Bryce struggled to breathe. How did Danica and Sophie know each other?
Danica found Sophie using her Vaneer powers, Emil said. She could smell Sophie's gift or something. She needed Sophie to do something for her. Danica couldn't do it because she was too recognizable. But Sophie, Emil towed the carpet. She wasn't.
Bryce cut in. Sophie was a human, or passed as one. She'd be ignored by most. What did Danica need her to do?
Emil shook his head.
I don't know. I wasn't able to talk to Sophie for very long when we were in Kavala.
Hunt's wide eyes shone with surprise, his anger at her seemingly forgotten for the moment. She pulled a slip of paper from her pocket. These letters and numbers were found on your sister's body. Any idea what they mean?
Emil bounced his knee.
No.
Damn it. Bryce twisted her mouth to the side.
Head bowed, Emil whispered.
I'm sorry I don't know anything else.
Hunt cleared his throat, reached in front of Bryce to clasp the boy's shoulder.
You did good, kid. Really good. We owe you.
Emil offered Hunt a wobbly smile. Yet Bryce's mind spun. Danica had needed Sophie to find something big, and though it had taken her years after Danica had died, Sophie had finally found it, and it had indeed been big enough that the Hind had killed her, rather than risking Sophie spreading it.
Hunt said, drawing her from her thoughts, Bryce?
Her mate nodded pointedly to the window a few feet away.
Give us a minute, she said to Emil with a smile, and walked over to the window, Hunt trailing her.
Hunt whisper hissed, What do we do with him now? We can't leave him here. It's only a matter of time until the Viper Queen figures out that he doesn't have powers, and we can't bring him with us. Pippa might very well come sniffing now that we destroyed that suit, and they really do need a Thunderbird's power.
Pippa Spetsos is a bad woman,
Emil said from the couch, paling. Hunt had the good sense to look embarrassed that his little fit had been overheard.
Sophie warned me about her. After I got on the boat, she wanted to question me. I ran the moment no one was looking.
but she and her Lightfall unit tracked me, all the way to the marshes. I hid in the reeds and was able to shake them there.
Smart. Bryce pulled out her phone.
And we know all about Pippa, don't worry. She won't get anywhere near you. She glared at Hunt.
You really think I didn't plan this out?
Hunt crossed his arms, brows high, but Bryce was already dialing.
Hey, Fury.
Yeah, we're here. Bring the car around.
You brought Axtar into this?
She's one of the few people I trust to escort him to his new home. Fear flooded Emil's eyes. Bryce walked back to the couch and ruffled his hair.
You'll be safe there, I promise.
She gave Hunt a warning look over her shoulder. She wasn't going to reveal more until they'd left. But she said to Emil,
Go use the bathroom. You're in for a long ride.
Hunt was still sorting through his racing feelings when they walked out of the meat market, Emil hidden beneath the shadows of a hooded sweatshirt. As promised, the Viper Queen had let them leave, no questions asked. She'd only smiled at Bryce. Hunt suspected, with a sinking feeling, that she already knew Emil had no powers, that she'd taken in the kid because, despite his potential, there was one thing that might be more valuable to her one day. Bryce owing her a favor. Hell yeah, he was going to have his little alpha hole fit. But he tucked away the thoughts when he found Fury Axtar leaning against a sleek black sedan, her arms crossed. Emil stumbled a step. Hunt didn't blame the kid. Bryce threw her arms around her friend, saying, Thank you so much. Fury pulled back and turned to survey Emil as if she were looking at a particularly nasty bug.
Not much meat on him.
Bryce nudged her with an elbow. So get him some snacks on the road.
Snacks?
Fury said, but opened one of the rear doors.
You know, Bryce drawled, garbage food that provides zero nutrition for our bodies, but lots of nutrition for our souls. How could she be so glib about what she'd done?
Any number of people would likely kill her for it. If not Cormac, then the River Queen, or Ophion, or the Hind. Fury shook her head, chuckling, but beckoned to the boy.
In you go.
Emil balked. Fury flashed a feral smile.
You're too short for the front. Airbag safety regulations.
You just don't want him messing with the radio, Bryce muttered.
Fury didn't deny it, and Emil didn't say anything as he climbed into the back seat. He had no bag, no belongings. Hunt remembered that feeling. After his mother had died, he'd had no traces or reminders or comforts of the child he'd been, the mother who had sung him to sleep. Nausea churned in his gut. Hunt said to the kid, Don't let Fury boss you around. Emil lifted wide, pleading eyes to Hunt.
Gods, how had everyone forgotten that he was only a kid? Everyone except Bryce.
Shahar would never have done something like this, risked so much for someone who could do her absolutely no good. But Bryce? Hunt couldn't stop himself from stepping closer to her, from brushing his wing against her in a silent apology. Bryce stepped beyond his reach. Fair enough. He'd been an asshole. She asked Fury,
You've got the address?
Yes. We'll be there in 8 hours. 7 if we don't bother with snacks.
He's a kid. He needs snacks, Hunt cut in.
But Fury ignored him and stalked around the car, sliding into the driver's seat. 2 handguns were buckled to her thighs. He had a feeling more were in the glove compartment and trunk. And then there was whatever Vaynir power she possessed that made Fury Axtar, well, Fury Axtar.
You're lucky I love you, Quinlan, and that Juniper didn't want this kid here for another minute.
Hunt caught the way Bryce's throat bobbed, but she lifted a hand in farewell. Then she approached the still-open back door, where she said to Emil,
Your name isn't Emil Renast anymore, okay?
Panic sparked in the kid's face. Bryce touched his cheek, as if she couldn't help it. The last of Hunt's anger dissolved entirely. Bryce was saying, All the documents will be waiting for you. Birth certificate, adoption papers.
Adoption?
Emil croaked.
Bryce grinned winningly at the kid. You're part of the Quinlan Salago clan now. We're a crazy bunch, but we love each other. Tell Randall to make you chocolate croissants on Sundays. Hunt had no words. She hadn't only found a place for this lost kid. She'd found him a new family. Her family. His throat tightened to the point of pain, his eyes stinging. But Bryce kissed Emil's cheek, shut the door, and thumped the car roof. Fury sped off down the cobblestone street, hooked a sharp left, and was gone. Slowly, Bryce turned back to him.
You're sending him to your parents, he said quietly.
Her eyes iced over. Did I miss the memo where I needed your approval to do so?
For Erd's sake, that's not why I was mad.
I don't care if you're mad, she said, flickering with light. Just because we're fucking doesn't mean I answer to you.
Pretty sure it's a little bit more than fucking.
She bristled, and his anger bristled with it. But he remembered where they were, right in front of the Viper Queen's headquarters, where anyone might see or try to start shit. I have to go to work, Bryce said, practically biting out each word.
Fine. So do I.
Fine. She didn't wait for him before striding off. Hunt rubbed his eyes and shot skyward. He knew Bryce was well aware that he trailed her from above as she wove through the tangle of streets that made up the meat market, banking northward toward the CBD only when she'd crossed Crone Street into the safety of the old square. But she didn't look up, not once. I only have 10 minutes before I need to go to the archives, Bryce said to her brother as he ushered her into his house an hour later. I'm already behind as hell at work. Steaming at Hunt, she'd used the long walk to process all that had happened with Emil and the Viper Queen, to pray that Fury didn't scare the living daylights out of the kid before he reached her parents' house in Nidaros, and contemplate whether she'd maybe overreacted a smidgen to Hunt's anger at her not telling him. Bryce had been just turning down the block to the archives when Rune called with his vague request to come over immediately. She'd thumbed in a quick message to her boss about a doctor's appointment running late and raced right over here. She dumped her purse beside the front door. Please start explaining why this was so urgent that you needed me to...
Oh.
She'd assumed it had something to do with Ethan, or that maybe Declan had found something, which was why she'd sprinted from Fyro in her stupid heels in the stupid heat and was now a sweaty mess. She hadn't expected a beautiful female clad in nothing but a blanket, standing against the foyer wall like some trapped animal. Her crimson eyes narrowed with warning. Bryce offered a smile to the female against the wall. Hey, everything all right? She hissed to Rune over her shoulder.
Where are her clothes?
She wouldn't wear them, Rune hissed back.
Believe me, Deck tried. He pointed to an untouched pile of male clothes by the stairs, but the female was scanning Bryce from her heels to her head.
You came to see the mystics. You blazed with starlight.
Bryce peered back. It wasn't the female mystic, but... She turned to see Ethan, looking guilty on the couch, with three fire sprites floating around his head. Her blood turned to acid. A plump sprite sprawled on his knee, beaming at Bryce. The memory of Lahaba burned bright and searing.
So, Ethan might have gotten pissed when he went back to the astronomer and found out that the female mystic is a wolf, Rune was saying. And he might have done something rash and taken something he shouldn't have, and then these morons freed them from the rings.
Bryce whirled to the female against the wall.
You were in one of the rings?
The red eyes flared again.
Yes.
Bryce asked Ethan. Why did you go back there?
I wanted to be sure about Connor, he said.
She didn't miss the tone of accusation, that she hadn't been as concerned as he was. Neither did Rune, who tensed at her side. Bryce swallowed hard.
Is he...
okay?
Ethan dragged a hand through his hair.
I don't know. I need to find out.
Bryce nodded gravely, then managed to face the three sprites in the living room, managed to lift her chin and ask, voice shaking only slightly,
Do you know a sprite named Lahaba?
No,
said Milana, the full-bodied sprite so similar to Lily that Bryce could barely stand to face her.
What clan is she?
Bryce inhaled a shuddering breath. The males had hushed. Lahaba claimed she was a descendant of Queen Ranthia Drawl, Queen of Embers. One of the slender sprites, Rithi, maybe, puffed with red flame.
An heir of Ranthia?
A chill went down Bryce's arms. She said so.
Fire sprites do not lie about their lineage,
said the third sprite, Sasa.
How do you know her?
I knew her, Bryce said. She died 3 months ago. She gave her life to save mine.
The three sprites floated toward Bryce.
The draw line has long been scattered to the winds,
Sasa said sadly.
We don't know how many remain. To lose even one.
She bowed her head, flame dimming to a soft yellow. The dragon in the hall said to Bryce,
You were a friend to this sprite.
Bryce twisted to the female.
Yes, damn her tight throat.
To the three sprites, she said. I freed Lahaba before she died.
It was her.
She could barely get the words out. It was her first and final act of freedom to choose to save me. She was the bravest person I've ever met. Milana drifted to Bryce, pressing a warm, burning hand to her cheek.
In her honor, we shall call you an ally of our people.
Bryce didn't miss the slave tattoo on Milana's wrist. The other two sprites bore the same marking. She slowly turned to Ethan.
I'm glad you stole them from that creep.
It didn't feel right to leave them.
Something in her chest melted, and she suppressed the urge to hug her old friend, to cry at the glimmer of the male she'd once known. Bryce asked Rune instead,
Can't we find some way out of this, Mr. Fancy Prince?
Mark's on it, Declan said, holding up his phone. He thinks you two might be able to use your royal sway to either commandeer them on behalf of the royal household, or get the astronomer to accept payment for them rather than press charges.
Payment? Bryce blurted. Relax, Flynn said, smirking. We got the money, princess.
Yeah, I've seen your daddy's fancy house, Bryce quipped, earning a scowl from Flynn and an ooh from the sprites. Bryce suppressed her smile and lifted a brow at Rune. She'd fucked up one friendship thanks to pulling princess rank, but this, for Lahaba, she'd do it.
You in, chosen one?
Rune's mouth quirked to the side.
Hell yeah, Starborn.
Bryce waved him off and turned fully to the dragon in the hallway.
I'm guessing you cost a lot.
More than even a prince and princess can afford,
the dragon said with a note of bitterness.
I was a gift to the astronomer from an archangel.
Must have been some reading the astronomer did for them, Flynn muttered.
The dragon hedged.
It was.
Her eyes cooled to jet-black cinders. To leave her at the astronomer's mercy, to go back into that tiny little ring to sit on his filthy old fingers.
Look, Bryce said, if Mark's right about the commandeering slaves thing for royal services, then Rune and I can make up some shit to explain why we need you.
Why help me?
The dragon asked. Bryce tapped her wrist. My mate was a slave. I can't turn a blind eye to it anymore. No one should. And since she'd already helped out one lost soul today, why not add a few more?
Who is your mate?
The dragon said.
Wait, Flynn objected. You guys are mates? Like, mates, mates?
Mates, mates, Rune said.
Does the Autumn King know?
Declan asked. Bryce could have sworn Rune glanced at Ethan, who was busy with something on his phone, before she said, Let's say it was officially confirmed last night. Flynn whistled. Bryce rolled her eyes, but faced the dragon again. His name is Hunt Athalar. Recognition kindled in the dragon's eyes.
Orion Athalar.
One and the same, Bryce said. You know him? Her mouth pressed into a thin line.
only by reputation.
Ah, Bryce asked, a shade awkwardly. What's your name?
Ariadne.
Ari for short, Flynn chimed in.
Never Ari,
the dragon snapped. Bryce's mouth twitched. Well, Ariadne, expect these idiots to piss you off on an hourly basis, but try not to burn the place down. She winked at the dragon. Feel free to toast Flynn when he's a smartass, though. Flynn flipped her off, but Bryce turned toward the door, only to find three sprites in her face.
You should speak to our queen about Lahaba's bravery, Sasa said. Erythris is not a descendant of Ranthea, but she would like to hear your tale.
I'm pretty busy, Bryce said quickly. Gotta go to work. But Milana said to her sister,
She'd need to find Erythris first,
she explained to Bryce.
Last we heard, before we went into the rings all those years ago, she had been sold to one of the Asteri. But perhaps they'd let you speak to her.
Why would I need to speak to her? Bryce asked as she kept heading for the door, aware of Ariadne's keen gaze.
Because princesses need allies,
Rithi said, and Bryce halted. Bryce sighed. I'm going to need a really big drink after work, she said, and walked out the door, her phone already at her ear.
What?
Jessica said by way of answering. The astronomer. You know him? Bryce had zero idea what the old male was, but he seemed like he'd be in the House of Flame and Shadow. There was silence from the sorceress before she said,
Why?
Looking for some strings to pull? Jessica laughed quietly.
You're the one who stole his rings.
Maybe they had some sorcerer message board support group. Let's say a friend did.
And now you want, what, my money to pay for them?
I want you to convince him to accept the money my friends will pay for them.
One of those rings is priceless.
Yeah, the dragon, Ariadne.
Is that what she calls herself? A low laugh. Fascinating.
You know her?
Of her.
Bryce crossed a busy intersection, keeping her head down as a passing tourist gawked too long in her direction. At least no dreadwolves prowled the streets. So, can you help or not? Jessica grunted.
I'll make a call. No promises.
What are you going to say?
That he owes me a favor.
Dark promise glittered in the words.
And now you do, too.
Get in line, Bryce said, and hung up. By the time Bryce reached her little office in the archives, relieved she hadn't needed to pull her princess rank again, she was ready to bask in the AC and kick